Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
And welcome aboard Mind Food Radio. How are you, Michael, and how was your week?
It was very good, but is it true we're interviewing someone who's riding from one city to another on a lawnmower?
Yeah, she's got a crash helmet ready. She's charged up. I tell you what, I wonder how far a lawnmower goes before you have to refuel it.
I don't know, but we're going to find out. It's actually for a very good cause. Kiss goodbye to MS.
Fantastic cause. Sustainable seafood.
That's right, with Al Brown, our brand new foodie in Mind Food. He's going to talk all about how we shouldn't be overfishing, even our local waters.
And Alison Amos is going to join us with some alarming facts on ovarian cancer today as well.
And also don't forget Polly Rhea. She's a naturopath and she's talking all about weight loss.
Well, that's what's coming up on the show. So all you've got to do is sit back and relax and enjoy what's coming up next here at Mind Food Radio.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
And now on Mind Food Radio, we're talking about the area of weight loss. Our naturopath Polly Rhea is joining us. It's about a healthy body type and shape, Michael.
And that's the thing. It's not about a diet or anything like that. It is about a healthy body shape and how you feel and your intake and your outtake in terms of exercise and things like that. So let's welcome to the show Polly Rhea. Now, you're a naturopath, Polly. Tell us about the work you've done as a naturopath in this area.
Okay, I am a naturopath. So a lot of my clients come to see me for weight loss. And as you can imagine at this time of year, there's a lot of people who have sort of indulged over Christmas. So lots of people are trying to lose just, you know, 2 or 3 kilos as they come in into the new year. So I work with them mainly on diet, just to limit a bit of their calorie intake, but to give them a lot of education as well around what actually is a healthy diet. There's so many different fad diets out, and I think people get caught up in following one particular diet. But I like to give my clients a bit of an option and just make sure that what they are having is healthy food, because to me that's the best weight loss program.
And getting that regular exercise too.
It's so important. Exercise is a really big part, not just for weight loss, but for, you know, for general health as well. So you often associate things like diabetes and, you know, cardiovascular diseases with overweight people. And a healthy diet is so important in treating that, but exercise is equally important as well. So it's important for me to get them sort of outside and enjoying this beautiful, you know, long days that we've got, and going for a walk after dinner is really helpful.
It always sounds so easy, doesn't it? But, you know, in reality, you know, you get busy at work and there's stress and juggling lots of things. And I know they do sound all like excuses, and we make such great plans at the start of each year. Why do you think it is we don't hold on to them during the year?
Well, that's the thing. I actually think a big part of that is that people do go on extreme fad diets and they're not sustainable. So when you go from having obviously so many indulgences over Christmas to stepping into an extreme diet, you lose interest very quickly, and so you don't sustain the diet or the results that you might get long term. So for me, I think the big thing, as I say, education is probably the biggest part of healthy eating, and just making people aware of what foods they're having. Giving them lots of options, giving them, you know, not just sort of 2 or 3 options to have for lunch, but showing them many different options and just making it creative so that they don't get bored.
So if someone's listening today, Christmas is just over, and they've looked at themselves and thought, oh my goodness, what am I going to do to try and reclaim my body? What are some things that they could do very quickly to help them on their path?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I always say coming off Christmas, you've probably slipped into a few bad habits, and some of them definitely overeating. So really regulating your blood sugar levels are important, and 3 things you can do to help you with that is increase your protein. So having something like a fish or a piece of chicken with each meal is important. Also increasing fiber as well, that'll help to balance your blood sugar levels. So having some psyllium husks or increasing, for example, your nut intake, that's also going to help balance your blood sugar levels too. And just eating small meals throughout the day. So not sort of going for 2 or 3 hours without eating, or 3 or 4 hours without eating, just snacking on little things every now and then so that it stays constant.
So a little bit of grazing.
A little bit of grazing, exactly. Yeah. But grazing is the key. It's not having 5 main meals, it's having 5 small meals throughout the day.
Sure. And do a bit of exercise, and that should get you on the right path, hopefully.
Lots of exercise, and there's always a little cheating along the way as well. The interesting thing with nature is when you do have healthy food, there's such a term as negative calorie food. So celery, capsicums, apples, all of these beautifully nutritious foods are actually negative calories. So you use more calories burning those foods up than what they actually give you. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Well, Polly, yeah. Thank you for your advice and thanks for coming on the show today.
My pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you again. Polly Rhea there, a naturopath, talking a little bit about weight loss.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Well, it's time for a good cup of coffee.
Well, I've got to say, I have loved coming home lately because the smell of coffee has been extraordinary. We ran a competition in the magazine and online for the best coffee recipe.
I saw that.
And Michelle has been testing and trialing the top 12 or something recipes.
Yeah.
And the great thing is I get to try them all. So she's also brought them into work and she's had many of the different staff members cooking these different recipes. And I think she's chosen a couple of winners because they've been shooting them. But Michelle, welcome to the show.
Oh, hello. Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Are you bouncing off the wall?
I am.
It's all about coffee.
It is all about coffee. We've started the year. Look, I love to start the morning every day with my Nespresso coffee, which I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
And I've carried that coffee flavour all through my day now. We've been, as Michael said, I've been testing lots of recipes. And I must say, we've got some absolute winners. We've got hundreds and hundreds of emails of our favourite coffee recipes. And yeah, I've chosen two beautiful recipes. Mike, what was your favourite?
Well, I've got to say, I do love a profiterole. And
you could have fooled me.
Yeah, and it's the sort of thing you probably only eat when you're at a wedding or you're at a smorgasbord somewhere. It's not really something you make at home. But goodness knows, you seem to have made quite a few lately, and I've been loving them and eating them.
I have. Well, We've had a recipe. I'm not going to tell you who the people are because we haven't announced the winners yet.
Okay. So I hope I haven't blown away then when I've just said a preferred.
No, you haven't. But I'm going to tell you about that. Is it right? The coffee eclair recipe we have received was absolutely beautiful. It's a choux pastry which I have never made. My mother made them when I was growing up, and as she said, Mike, I remember them being special occasions. People would come over and she'd serve them with ice cream and chocolate sauce, and they were quite something special in our house. But this one is a beautiful recipe, and it's filled with a coffee custard. So I've made that, and it's very, very tasty. It's beautiful.
Ooh, yum.
I can't believe you haven't made choux pastry. They're absolutely perfect. Either that's a really easy recipe, or you're a whiz in the kitchen, because they're beautiful.
Well, I meant to be a whiz in the kitchen, thanks, Mike. But no, I've never made them before. Until I tested this recipe, and they were very easy. So for all you readers out there like me who have never made them before, you will love this recipe. You'll have to get the next issue, the March issue of Mind Food. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is the March issue, on sale in February. Now, the other one was a sort of a Pavlova stack, which again was...
It was beautiful.
And, you know, our oldest daughter, Lillian, she loves Pavlova.
Yeah,
so
as soon as
it was like, you know, she could smell it. She just, you know, wafted in.
And this is another beautiful recipe which we received from an Australian reader.
Yeah.
And it is so lovely. It's just a simple pavlova. You make three pavlovas and you stack them up, and would you believe, with a buttercream. You stick them between a bucket of cream all around it, and the coffee's in the buttercream, and then sprinkle it with toasted almonds. How beautiful does that sound?
Is there a good coffee to use for all this? I mean, there must be varying grades.
Well, there is, but I've made them all. It was a Nespresso competition, so I've made all the recipes using the Nespresso pods, and I have to say they've all been beautiful. So I've had fun mixing and matching
as I've
gone along with all the different flavours.
Yeah, I love my Nespresso machine as well. I'll tell you what you should do in the morning, Michelle. Don't tell Michael. Make your Nespresso tomorrow and drop a lint ball chocolate in there, and then stir it, honey. You'll get intoxication of chocolate and coffee together.
That could be fatal.
I do that every morning.
I'm not starting the new year very well.
But those pods that you cook with, they're so easy. Like, I've watched you do it, aren't they? Because it's all just there.
Yeah.
They're very easy.
So what, do you just cut the pod open there?
Yeah, and then
No. Just brew up the coffee and then...
okay.
As if you're making a cup of coffee
and then just use it like that. What a cool idea.
So we're going to announce the winners in the next issue of Mind Food. So get out to the shops and buy that and see who the lucky winners are. They actually won a Nespresso U machine.
Oh,
lucky
goodness.
Them. And listen, for more recipes, more coffee recipes, of course, you head to mindfood.com. And also, because of the start of the year, sign up for our daily recipe where we send you one of Michelle's beautiful recipes from Mind Food. Well, in the March edition, our lead health story is a story about ovarian cancer and the growth rates in both Australia and New Zealand. And I'd like to welcome to the show today Alison Amos, who is the CEO of Ovarian Cancer. Hi, Alison.
Hi, Michael. Thank you.
Now, let's go right back to basics. Just tell us a little bit about some of the background about ovarian cancer and the disease itself. And, you know, for those listeners who don't know much about it in terms of the types of ovarian cancer.
Sure. So ovarian cancer is a disease that can affect one or both of the ovaries. And unfortunately, at this stage, there isn't a detection test or an early detection test for ovarian cancer. And contrary to popular belief, the Pap smear doesn't detect the disease. It's diagnosed usually through a blood test and an internal ultrasound.
Mm-hmm.
But ovarian cancer can only definitively be diagnosed at the point of surgery.
Do you have to, when you have a blood test, does it automatically get screened, or do you have to sort of say, I want it tested for that as well?
No. So in consultation with your GP, and particularly if a woman has symptoms of ovarian cancer, then a particular blood test would be ordered to look at a particular marker called mm-hmm. CA125.
Yeah.
And that, in combination with the transvaginal ultrasound, can give an indication of whether ovarian cancer could be present, and then that woman may proceed to have a surgical biopsy or operation to determine a definitive diagnosis.
Now, I guess the key thing, though, is, you know, not to make you know, the patient sick with worry, but what are some of the symptoms to be aware of?
Yep, absolutely. And look, as there is no early detection test for ovarian cancer, it's really important that women learn the four main symptoms, which are abdominal or pelvic pain, persistent abdominal bloating, and some women have talked about that as being like having an inflated balloon full of water in their belly,
mm-hmm.
needing to urinate often or urgently, or feeling full after eating a small amount. Now, of course, these are symptoms that many women will experience from time to time,
mm-hmm.
and are usually signs of other more common and less severe conditions. But if they're new for a woman, or if she experiences them on all or most days for at least 2 weeks, then she should see a doctor without delay to get them checked out.
And treatment for this, what's the treatment?
Yes, so ovarian cancer most commonly is treated with a combination of both surgery and chemotherapy.
And it's something that can take, what, months or years? Is it got a very big success rate?
No, very sadly, no. The outcomes are quite poor for women with ovarian cancer. So more than 70% of women are diagnosed with disease which is already advanced stages.
Mm.
And so we have about 1,300 women who are diagnosed with ovarian cancer each year. So about 3 women a day.
Wow.
But in each year in Australia, more than 800 women will die of the disease.
That's quite an alarming figure. So, Alison, is it increasing? Or
is that a growth rate or not?
No, I look at the 5-year sort of survival rates, which is one of the benchmarks that is used, have stayed relatively steady over recent years, and it's around the 43% 5-year survival rate. So, you know, it's a serious issue. Yeah.
Now, February is the Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing in and around that?
Yeah, so Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month is a national campaign that's around raising awareness of ovarian cancer in the community and to raise funds for awareness, support, advocacy and research programs. And so teal is the international colour for ovarian cancer, and during the month people can show their support in a whole range of ways. Hosting an afternoon teal or another teal-inspired fundraising event with friends, family or work colleagues. Buying or wearing a teal ribbon, particularly on Teal Ribbon Day, which is Wednesday the 27th of February, or by making a donation through our website, which is ovariancancer.net.au.
We've been talking about ovarian cancer today, and just chatting with the CEO there for the foundation, Alison Amos. And for more details, you can go to mindfood.com. Thank you, Alison.
Thank you very much.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
It's Mind Food Radio, and Al Brown joins us again here on the program today talking about, Michael,
seafood. And the thing is about seafood is not to take too much. I think that's the key thing. You know, it's all very well getting out there and fishing with the kids and experiencing that. But be smart. Welcome to the show, Al.
What a great introduction. Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Michael.
Well, it's your kind of thing, isn't it? You know, I'd say, you know, having spent time with you down there in Wellington and on the coast, you seem very much into that in terms of, you know, and the journey you've done in terms of different shows and books.
Oh, it's huge to me, the ocean and what we have in it. And, And certainly in Australia and New Zealand, we have oceans that are still in relatively good nick. And I just think there's a huge responsibility for us to look after them and for our children to be able to experience what we have.
Al, very quickly, I was just up in Bali recently. It was very, very sad to see up in those sort of regions, like rivers full of rubbish, all emptying into the ocean. There's no sense of looking after the environment. And that's all going straight out into our sea. And I was saying to one of the guys there, so where do you catch your fish? And he said, out there. I said, that's a rubbish dump.
What do you think, Al?
Well, I think it's like putting your recycling out in the morning and then travelling through China, and you sort of think, well, how the hell am I meant to, you know, how am I saving the world by putting up my plastic bottles each week? But I think you look after your own back doorstep, and that's, to me, that's what, you know, the coast is all about, and the fish, you know, the fish that we have, you know, we need to be smart about what we catch and what we take, and if we're recreational fishermen, we should be thinking about what do we need for a feed. So if we're having a party, well, you catch a few more. If you're not, if it's just the two of you for dinner, you catch a couple. You can still fish all day and keep putting them back. But I think we've just got to be smart about that. And we've also got to understand that there's more fish in the sea than sort of barramundi or blue cod or the real favourites. And if we understand, a great favourite of mine forever to learn about all the different species was, if I was going to go and buy some snapper at the fishmonger, I always bought another piece of fish that I hadn't cooked before just to take home with my snapper and have a play around with that. And it's incredible that you always had these sort of bias or these thoughts that some fish weren't that great. But if they're fresh and they're cooked in the right manner, they're absolutely amazing. And so we want to be not just eating the same popular species the whole time. They're all fantastic if you understand how to cook them.
Yeah. Over summer, I seem to be throwing more fish back than we were wheeling in. But in our little dinghy that we had, there was like a ruler, and it gave you all the different sizes for all the different fish. And I'd never seen that before, but it was actually a perfect way as you're sitting out there bobbing along with the kids. And that was the first thing as we hauled them in, you know, is it big enough? And as I said, we seem to throw a whole lot more back.
Back into the...
But isn't there something wonderful about putting fish back?
Yeah, I mean, it is. You're right.
You know, if you handle them, you've enjoyed the little fight, bringing them to the boat, you've handled them, you've taken the hook out and you've had a wet rag or whatever and you've put them back. There's something wonderful about letting a fish go. And
I think also as humans, you're right, we love the idea of the catch, don't we, and the chase and actually getting it in. And once you've got it, if you don't need it, flick it back. I also want to mention something else you said there. You know, I think people do have the opportunity to change. You know, if you look at John West at the end of last year with their whole tuna fishing, they are now changing the way they are catching tuna. Now, there was a huge groundswell in and around that. We've got a story we're working on currently about that and how the sort of activism of just people on the street, people that are passionate about something and changing the way they do things. And I think you're right, Al. You know, if you love fishing, get out there and only catch the amount that you need.
Yeah, I think, I mean, those initiatives from certainly those huge corporates, I mean, I take my hat off to that, because that's all about dollars and cents to them. But, you know, they're showing that they've got a conscience as well. Or they're actually understanding that if they keep going the way they go, well, it's all over in 50 years anyway.
Yeah, well, that's dead right.
That's right.
Hey, listen, Al, thanks again for being on today's show.
Brilliant. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Al.
So for more recipes of Al's, head to mindfood.com and his latest feature in the new edition of Mind Food.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
And thank you for joining us here on Mind Food Radio with Ben Starr. Michael McHugh, we're off to Orange now. We're going to be chatting with Rhonda Sear, who had a bit of a sea change not too long ago. She's the executive officer of Taste Orange, and she's going to be talking to us today about some festivals. But first, Rhonda, how's life in Orange?
Life in Orange is amazing. Having made the move from Sydney to Orange, I have to say the lifestyle here is fantastic. Working here, living here, and just the whole, and being close enough to Sydney, if I need a Sydney fix, it's only 3.5 hours away, so that it's all good. It was a fantastic move, and certainly something I should have done sooner.
Oh, that's great. Now tell me, look, you're now the executive officer of this fantastic place, Taste Orange. So tell us what you've got to do there, and what are we talking about today? I think we're talking about some fabulous festivals.
What we're talking about is that we actually showcase a number of different festivals during the course of the year, and the next one we've got coming up is actually the Slow Summer Carnival. And this is 8 days of celebrating all things that are fun about life here in the country.
Yep.
and specifically the Orange region.
Mm-hmm.
And so we start off on Monday, the 21st of January, and we start off with an art exhibition and competition, and then we flow through to children's cooking classes with Kate Brax, who was the 2011 MasterChef winner.
Yep.
And then it's we follow that with Pups in the Park, which is a dog's day out in the park. and it actually attracts a lot of people, would you be surprised. But we have all sorts of demonstrations that go with that. And then we go on to, on Friday we have our Slow Summer, our night markets, which are, you know, incredible tourism icon for this region, where we actually have in the Central Park, Robertson Park, we have wineries and food and lots of kids' activities.
Oh, that's where I was at for the wedding a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you know how beautiful
at the Rotunda. It's beautiful there, isn't it?
Yes. Well, that's the venue for all our night markets.
Ah,
right. We attract anything between 2,000 to 5,000 people.
Wow.
So we have lots of music and lots of entertainment. So that really will kick us off for the long weekend. And Saturday is followed by the Orange Picnic Races, which is always a lot of fun.
That's a real country thing, isn't it?
It is a real country
thing. What about the Dragon Boat Racing? Are you doing that again?
Absolutely. That's on the following day. So after we've had a big day at the races,
yep.
The following day, on Sunday the 27th, we actually go have a day at the beach, as we call it.
Good on you.
When I first moved here, I didn't focus on country matching with water sports.
No, and where do you do all that?
At Lake Canobolas.
Ah, okay.
Which is only 8 kilometres from the centre of Orange.
That's right.
So we will have a dragon boat challenge. So we're bringing boats in from Bathurst and Dubbo to compete, and it's a corporate charity fundraising event. But last year we held it for the first time, and we attracted about 2,500 people to the lake.
Fantastic.
So it's a fun day with lots of kids' activities.
Now tell me, over this weekend, are a lot of the hotels getting behind all this with special packages and things like that?
Well, they are. Mm. In regard to the promotion, they are. As far as special packages, unfortunately, we do have limited accommodation in Orange.
Yep.
We are working on fixing that.
Mm.
So there is, you know, there is a lot of variety. But
yeah.
It's just not as much as we would like. But hopefully, with the growth of visitation to Orange, is that we will see some more properties develop. And there's certainly some on the books already.
Fantastic.
But certainly, they're behind it in regard to the promotion of the event.
And now the big event, of course, kicks off on Monday the 21st.
That's correct.
And it finishes, when does it finish again?
It finishes on Monday the 28th, which is of the long weekend.
Of the long weekend.
And yes, and we have an Animals on Bikes trail bike ride to finish the festival.
Well, that's a nice thing to do with the family before the kids go back to school, hey?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. So why don't you head out there to Orange. Rhonda, thank you very much for your time today. Rhonda Sear.
You're welcome.
And that was Rhonda Sear, the Executive Officer of Taste Orange. For more details, go to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Well, now on the program, it's time to talk with Carolyn Enting. And, of course, Carolyn looks after all our style and wonderful things like that in the worlds of fashion. I recently got back from Bali, Carolyn, and everyone's wearing hats.
They are, and particularly the men. And, of course, you know, a few years ago, you would have been hard-pressed to see a man in anything other than a cap.
Yeah.
A sports cap. But fashion's sort of gone back to the fedoras and the trilbies, and guys are getting much more fashion-focused, and it's actually a really lovely look.
It is a lovely look. You know, I was chatting with my mother last night. I went out to dinner with her, and we were talking about some of our old relatives who have passed away. And my great-auntie and her mum, my grandma, were milliners.
Ah.
And they made hats in the Strand Arcade just off George Street there in the city of Sydney when they moved from the country. So I said to Mum, I didn't realise they did all that. So fashion is definitely a part of, my background. But, yes, hats are back in everywhere.
They are. And actually, I was doing an interview with Stephen Jones. He's a milliner,
mm-hmm.
a very famous British milliner who's coming to New Zealand
mm-hmm.
in March. And interestingly enough, the English word milliner comes from the word Milan, which I didn't know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, it's a real skill, and you know, in education, I do a bit of work in education and training. It's one of those courses that's a very boutique course, and it's one that could literally die off the spectrum because the demand. You know, you need to have the demand to keep courses running, likewise to keep all the hat makers in business. But it's a wonderful, wonderful skill, isn't it?
It totally is, and it's very specialised. But I just find it completely fascinating as well. Because I was talking to Stephen the other day, because he's just designed all these trilbies for Mick Jagger's the Rolling Stones 50th anniversary tour.
Oh, wow.
And so he's made this sort of zigzag weave trilby to match a suit. And I said to him, what is the difference between a trilby and a fedora? Because, you know, essentially you look at the hat and they're both very similar looking with an indent in the crown. And he said, well, the trilby's the one with the stingy brim. It's got the smaller brim, and the fedora, and that's a British one. And the fedora is much bigger overall, and it's American. So I did a little bit of research because I thought, well, that's quite interesting. And actually both the name of the fedora and the trilbies both actually come from plays.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, which is quite bizarre. So the trilby comes from a, now my pronunciation is going to be terrible.
That's all right.
Georges du Maurier's 1894 novel, Trilby, which was, one was first worn in the London production of the stage, London production stage option. And the trilby was widely worn in the 1920s, right up until the end of the World War II, where it supplemented, you know, the other hats like these bowlers. And the fedora comes from an 1882 play written for Sarah Bernhardt, where she plays Princess Fedora. Oh. And actually, it was considered at the time a female fashion, but the men took it over in the late 19th century, and it's become known, you know, sort of associated with gangsters and prohibition.
Yeah.
And then, of course, then it's fallen out of favour again in the late 50s, and then it's come back in fashion again.
Yeah, it's funny how everything old is new again. But, you know, when you look at these new wonderful hats that guys can get, what's your opinion? I mean, what age should you start to get into that type of stuff?
Oh, young guys, are, you know, teenagers are getting into it now.
Yeah.
You know, you see them out there wearing these fedoras and trilbies. And actually, funnily enough, I was thinking about it yesterday when I was at the tennis, because traditionally a trilby and a fedora is made out of felt, which is, you know, quite a wintry weight. And so you're seeing these styles made in sort of like Panama weave.
Yes.
With straw hats.
Yeah.
And which are, of course, much lighter to wear in summer. And I think, you know, with the extreme heats that we're, you know, experiencing in Australia and New Zealand at the moment, really good summer, it's really important for guys to protect their heads as well as the girls.
Well, Carolyn, thanks for talking to us today all about the wonderful world of hats. I love it.
Would you believe that fedoras are now coming back into fashion for ladies? Well, they are already in fashion for ladies, but they're just churning them out there in the catwalks now. So the ladies are reclaiming the fedora.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you for your time today, and we'll chat to you next time.
Great.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Well, at the end of last year, I travelled to the Mornington Peninsula, a beautiful part of Australia, and I went to many different vineyards and beautiful restaurants. And one of my favourite was Montalto, and had lunch there in the gorgeous restaurant with the winemaker there, Simon Black. And I'd like to welcome to the show today a guy who's got a very interesting job, the artist and creative director of the Montalto Sculpture Prize and Exhibition. Hi, Neil.
Hi. Hi, guys.
It's a beautiful part of the world that you live in, isn't it?
It's a magic part of the world. I feel very very lucky to be where I am.
Now, sitting there looking out over those vineyards and olive grove, and, of course, these extraordinary sculptures, tell me, how does the sculpture prize work? It's an annual exhibition, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it's annual. So, sort of, during the middle of the year, we start advertising for artists to submit proposals to be in the show, and then towards the end of the year, around November, when the deadline is up, we get together with our collection of judges, and we go through all the proposals and choose finalists to be exhibited in the prize.
So you have over 100 submissions received, 24 finalists that are then selected.
Yep.
So what does the art range from, or what are we looking at to begin with? What does the 100 consist of, and what do you weed it down to?
It's a whole mixture of artworks, and, you know, both in scale, material, price, whether it's an installation, an ethereal installation through to a sort of a monolithic piece of work. It's extremely varied, and it's a hard process getting down from 100 plus to this year to 24 that are going to be in the show.
And to set it in a 50-acre natural amphitheatre of the estate's vineyards must be quite classic as well, hey?
Oh, look, it's lovely seeing the landscape evolve when these works start to be installed, which is happening next week.
How big's your backyard, Michael? It's not 50 acres.
It's certainly not as big as theirs.
How many people come to this big exhibition, though? You must have thousands.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're taking into account all the people that are passing through the property, you know, not just for sculpture, but for the dining experience and wine tasting as well. I mean, you know, we're introducing sculpture to a hell of a lot of people. And also, obviously, you do have the people who come down for the show itself. But, it's hard to put sort of a finger on numbers.
Yeah.
But we'd like to hope that there'd be 1,000 people a week coming to the property.
Now, the property's actually quite famous for people getting engaged there. Is that right?
I believe so. I believe there have been quite a few. They do, the great catered picnic, private picnic sites. There's sort of, I think there's 5 picnic sites that you can book out, and obviously they're pretty romantic spots. So.
It's just so beautiful. That doesn't surprise me at all. And listen, I've got to ask, what's the garden like at the moment? Because when I was there, I met with Wendy Mitchell, who owns the property, and she was pottering around in the pottage, and it just looked absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, well, it's the time of year to be there and look around that garden. Yeah, I was just there yesterday, sort of dealing with another sculpture on site, sort of relocating one, and having to go back through the vegetable gardens, and couldn't help but grab a zucchini along the way.
Oh, that's nice.
There's some lovely stuff going on there at the moment.
Well, when you see her next, she gave me some pumpkin seeds, and so tell her that I've planted them and I've already got some up. So
fantastic.
It's looking good. So New South Wales has got some of Montalto's pumpkins on its way.
Loves nothing more than to share.
Thanks, Neil, for joining us today. And for more details, you can jump onto mindfood.com. It's always interesting what people put in their gardens. Like, you know, sculpture seems to be on the increase.
Yeah, just I think the way the whole place is being designed, you sort of sit in this really lovely restaurant building and you look down onto it all. Mm. So the sculptures throughout all the paddocks and the vineyards and, some of them I would question in terms of taste level, but most of them, I've got to say, were pretty extraordinary.
Fantastic.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
It's Mind Food Radio with Ben and Michael. Well, here's an interesting topic, Michael, kissing goodbye to MS, and we have Megan Healy joining us on the line. How are you, Megan?
Very well, thank you.
Kissing goodbye to MS, how do we do that?
MS Australia's major promotion for the month of May, it's their Kiss Goodbye to MS campaign, and the idea is just to wear red lipstick for every day for the month of May, or do something to raise money for Kiss Goodbye to MS. And of course, I've chosen to ride a lawnmower from Melbourne to Sydney to raise money for
oh my gosh,
MS Australia. So
that's fantastic. Tell me, with the stats with MS, is it on the increase or decrease?
I think it's on the increase. The statistics were that there were 21,000 Australians, but in the meantime, it's been increased to 23,000 Australians.
And do we know what the cause of it is?
No, nobody knows what the cause is, no, which means there's no cure because they don't know what causes it. So,
and are we seeing it more in younger demographics than older, or is it pretty much even Stephen?
When I was diagnosed with MS, the average age was 28. I think the average age has gone up a little bit. The average age is now 30.
So when you were diagnosed, what went through your mind at that time?
So unfortunately, when I was 37, I had an attack that left me with permanently weak legs, getting weaker, and so I'm wheelchair bound now.
Oh, right.
And I'm also losing strength in my hands and my arms. But hopefully that won't happen to many people from now on, because they've changed their treatment priorities or protocols, I should say, because when I had this attack, not everybody was treated. You had to have some significant attacks to qualify for treatment.
Oh,
I understand. Whereas now, as soon as you're diagnosed with MS, you're offered treatment. So most people are being treated as soon as they're diagnosed. So probably most people won't end up like I am.
Megan, how do they diagnose you?
Mostly through MRI.
And in terms of, you know, the treatment and diagnosis, like, what would the symptoms be? If someone was listening into our show today, how would they know that they might have MS?
Oh, they're so varied. I mean, you can have... My eyes have never been affected other than I do have a little bit of optic neuritis, which means I've got a little bit of MS on my optic nerve, but it doesn't actually affect my sight.
Right.
So I was told very early on that if I look at something red and it's not red, get to a doctor straight away or get to a hospital straight away. So it can
be like that.
You're not seeing colours properly, often tingliness or numbness in any of your limbs, just weakness.
Yeah, and just get to the doctor and have an MRI check.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, you're riding for not only other people's cause, but your cause. So how do we get behind all that?
Well, you can follow us on Facebook. At Megan's Great MS Mowdown.
Yeah.
I'm doing it to raise money for Kiss Goodbye to MS, but I'm also doing it to raise awareness about the lack of funding has, that is available to have carers come into people's homes. Mm-hmm. And also I want to raise, give a bit of a shout out to the young carers, because my children are young carers, and it's really the role of carers, young and old, that allow us to do what we want to do, really. And the young carers, my children, are absolutely fabulous. So I want to stop at schools along the way between Melbourne and Sydney and really sort of give a shout out to the kids in the schools, because on average you will get sort of one in every 10 kids care for somebody.
Yes.
So, you know, we might get 3 kids in a classroom that are, they're actually young carers. So I just want to give them a shout out and let them know how fabulous they are.
Well, Megan, and thanks for joining us on today's program. Very great cause that you're working towards there, and good luck with it all, hey?
Thank you very much.
Good on you. Kiss goodbye to MS. And for more details, jump onto mindfood.com as well. Well, that's a wrap for this week. Michael, how did you get through that sustainable seafood? Are you throwing a fish back again?
Good, but you know what? I'm off to have a gelato and a swim. What about you?
Yeah, same thing. Hey, I went to Balmoral Beach the other night. They have night swimming.
Good Lord.
Under the spotlights.
Safe?
Well, it was until I saw something that looked like some sort of shark thing. What was that thing that Steve Irwin got speared by?
A stingray.
There was a stingray. That's what it was.
We've just done an amazing story on manta rays.
Really? Rhonda Sear, great information on the taste of orange there as well.
And
Neil
Williams. And are you off to buy a hat after talking with Carolyn?
Carolyn's segment. Love that segment. Of course, we all should go out and buy hats. Anyway, until next week, take care. See you, Michael.
See you. Have a great week.
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick K. Roos. Bogart Torelli speaking.